This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2019, held at Faith Builders from July 29 through August 2.
Help the students in our classrooms, especially those that struggle with reading and spelling. And just a little background on myself before we get started. I am excited about getting back into my third grade classroom this fall. I'm a homeroom teacher. And I took the last 4 months of the this spring to complete my bachelor's degree in special education. I had to take off from school and go and do an internship at another school. And I'm just excited about implementing the things that I've learned into my classroom this fall. As it didn't take me long in my teaching career as I taught to discover the diversity of the needs in my classroom. And I kind of categorized them in my mind in two different categories, the behavioral needs, or those things like ADHD or autism, or in the behavior category, and then the other side would be learning needs, academic needs. And dyslexia is a specific learning disability underneath the academic category. And there's a lot of ideas out there about dyslexia. And so my goal today is to try to bring some clarity to what is dyslexia and what should we do to actually help students that have dyslexia. So in your handout, the first two pages, I have a little challenge for you. There are 10 statements on the front and the back, and each of these statements is either fact or fiction, either true or false. So I'm going to give you a few minutes, not a whole lot of time, but a few minutes to go through and read these statements and decide what do you think. Just give it a shot. I recognize we have a lot of different, come with different experiences and different backgrounds with dyslexia, but go ahead and answer these and feel free to discuss with your neighbor, compare notes if you have a few minutes at the end. So you can go ahead. All right. It looks like most of you are finished, so let's get started, and we'll just go through these statements and discuss, are they fact or fiction? And if they are fiction, what is true about dyslexia in this statement? So number one, people with dyslexia see words backward. What do you think? Thumbs up if it is fact, and thumbs down if it is fiction. Right, pretty good. I'm impressed. You're correct. It is fiction. They aren't actually seeing the words backward. Sometimes it can look that way, like if it's a short word, especially like the word cat, they might mix up the letters and it looks like it's backward. I've never actually seen someone write entire, like a longer word and completely backward. Like, see if I can even do it, like crash. I've never seen them actually flip a whole word like that. And it's just, it's not what's happening when a child has dyslexia. What it really is a problem with phonemic awareness, which we will talk more about what is phonemic awareness in a little bit. But it's a lot more about how they are hearing sounds in words than it is about seeing them. It's more about auditory and hearing sounds. And we'll discuss more about that. Let's go to number two. Any child who reverses letters or numbers has dyslexia. True or false? All right, good. Yes, it is fiction as well. Sometimes it's tempting, like especially in kindergarten and first grade, to say, oh no, they're reversing their letters, they must have dyslexia. And that's not the case. It's actually pretty normal for children to do that, especially in kindergarten and first grade, after they've been taught to handwriting and phonics and reading for like a year or two. Like by the end of first grade, they should not be doing that anymore. So if they're continuing to do that in second, third, fourth grade, then I would be getting more concerned about that. But it is pretty normal. A lot of children do that, and it's not necessarily a sign of dyslexia. Number three, 1 in 5 people have dyslexia. Fact or fiction? All right, it is a fact, yes. Now, most people with dyslexia actually goes undiagnosed. So dyslexia is like, there's a spectrum from like a mild dyslexia to moderate to severe to profound. So someone with mild dyslexia, you might never know it, actually, because they're so intelligent and that they can cover for it. And there's adults with mild dyslexia, and they really, it's like, hasn't necessarily impacted. They might be a slower reader, or school might have been difficult, but they made it through okay. And then you get to the severe, where it impacts everything that they do in school because reading is just impossible, seems to them. So that is a fact. Number four, dyslexia is caused by lack of reading exposure at home in the preschool years. What do you think? All right, good job. Maybe the statements are obvious, or maybe you actually know some things about dyslexia, which is great. It is fiction. The dyslexia is highly genetic. It's highly, if a relative of a student has dyslexia, the percentage of them having it or the chance of them having it is much higher. If there's dyslexia in the child's family tree, they have a 50% chance of having it. And so if you have the opportunity and you have a student that's struggling, it's great to ask parents, is there anyone else in your family that struggles with this? And it's very likely that you will see that. Number five, a child can have a high intelligence but experience an intense struggle with learning to read. What do you think? Yes, good. This is a fact. Intelligence and dyslexia or difficulty learning to read are not connected at all. They are separate things. And so I want to take just a little detour here before we go on to number six. And you have this as well on the third page of your handout, I believe. This is called, it's called the simple view of reading, or it's something that really helped me to understand reading and thinking about reading challenges. So for a child, in order for a child to have reading comprehension, they need to be able to recognize the words, which would be decoding and fluency. And then this piece is language comprehension. They need to be able to understand when language is spoken and comprehend, like when someone talks to me, I understand what you're saying. And then if you have both of these two pieces, you will have reading comprehension. So a child with dyslexia is very intelligent, and they do great in this category with understanding language. So I'm going to give them a one. And however, the decoding, the fluency, the sounding out words is really difficult. And so they are able to do that, and 0 times 1 equals 0. So this is like the profile of someone with dyslexia. And so dyslexia can look like a reading comprehension problem. So they are reading, they don't understand what they're reading, they aren't able to explain back to me what they read. It's because they're putting so much energy into this, into sounding out the words, that they don't have time or energy to put into what am I actually reading, what is it telling me, does it make sense? So that's kind of like the profile of someone with dyslexia. Then just other reading disabilities, someone might be able to do all the decoding and read like super fast, but they don't understand language or comprehend it, and they also have the same problem over here without reading comprehension. This is a whole different problem. Okay, this would be like students, English is not their primary language, or they might have autism, or just comprehension things. Like, I've worked with a student who could read words way beyond what she understood. She could sound them all out and know what they said and pronounce them correctly, but she had no clue what they meant. And that's a whole different problem. That's not dyslexia. So hopefully that kind of gives you a little idea there. I'm amazed the students that I've worked with dyslexia love the living history stories, the Faith Builders curriculum, because it's all like oral. I give it all to them. I'm reading these amazing stories with all this cool content, and they get it all. Like, they know all the answers, and they like sometimes understand the story better than my other students. But then when it comes to taking the tests, and like then they, that part is really hard, because like they know the answers, but they can't read it and write. Like, that part is what's getting in the way. So a solution for that, or what I've often done, is read the test out loud to them. And then if they can, if I read it to them and they can tell me all of the correct answers, then I'm delighted. And I would start out actually with writing it for them and kind of building them up, then starting having them read it to me. And then to get them to like move forward so that they can do it independently. But yeah, this dyslexia is very strong, usually. Like, if it's truly dyslexia, so I should just add this little piece too. Dyslexia often comes with other problems beside it. And that's what makes it extra challenging, I think. Like, if someone has only dyslexia, and that is their one problem, it's a lot easier to correct or help them than when they have a multiple things lined up. And so, yeah, anyway. Let's go on to number 6. There are several medications that can be used to treat dyslexia. True or false? All right, false. Very good. It is fiction. There is medication for ADHD, but ADHD is entirely different than dyslexia. Now, sometimes a student has dyslexia and ADHD, and sometimes if you give medication to help with ADHD, it might give them a little more of a oomph to focus, to put more energy into the reading part, but it is not getting to the root of the problem, not helping with the reading. So yeah, there is no medication for this. Dyslexia and ADHD are entirely separate problems. Number 7, dyslexia is a lifelong disorder that will go away on its own. An individual with dyslexia will grow out of it. True or false? Fiction. Yes, good. The earlier we can catch it is the better. The earlier that you can come to start helping them along the way or filling those gaps that are missing, the better it is. Now, it is a tricky or a fine line between recognizing if this child is just developmentally delayed, as in they just need to mature a little bit and they'll catch up, and we just need to give them a little more time, or if this is dyslexia and we need to start giving them help now. That is a tricky thing to figure out. But they will not grow out of it. They can learn and become, which is, we will get there. Number 8, children with dyslexia need to try harder to learn to read. Fiction, yeah. It's tempting for us to say, just try harder, go, like, keep working, and it's not, if the problem is dyslexia, that's not going to be the solution, or it's not really going to help them. It's going to catch up to them eventually. Like we had mentioned, these children with dyslexia are super intelligent, so they can cover, for a long time, they can memorize those little readers in first grade. They can look at the pictures and they can guess what it's going to be, and they can memorize, and they can kind of get through. You might not even fully pick it up, and then like when they get to about like third, fourth grade, and they have to read, you can't memorize all the words in the English language anymore, and you have to start just going deeper and going faster and more content, and that's when it sometimes is. It goes till then until it shows up. If it's not really severe. Number 9, difficulty creating rhyming words in the preschool years is an early sign of dyslexia. True. Fact. Yes. Good job. So this rhyming words is connected with the whole phonemic awareness thing. Hearing sounds, understanding. If I give you cat, bat, bird, and rat, which one does not rhyme. They should be able to, or that's an important skill, especially in those early years, if they are a preschooler and they're struggling with that. It's a practice, like give them lots of opportunities to interact with the rhyming words, whether it's in nursery rhymes or poems or in stories where there's rhyming. That's really important in the preschool years. Number 10, an individual with dyslexia will never read well. True or false? Fact or fiction? Yes, it is fiction. Good. Many successful people, successful people have had dyslexia. There's actually some like really famous scientists like Albert Einstein and Thomas Edison and Alexander Graham Bell actually were like super brilliant in this one area, but they really struggled with reading and with learning. And it's just interesting that those pieces go together. People with dyslexia can become excellent writers, decent spellers, and good readers if they receive the right kind of intervention. And so we want to talk a little bit today about, well, where do we start? How do we help them? So I have just a short clip here. Just this is kind of a summary of the overarching, the big picture of dyslexia. What is it? And we'll see if hopefully it will work here.
We've learned so much about what dyslexia is and isn't. We know it's a brain-based condition that impacts reading, spelling, and writing, but it's not a problem with vision. Dyslexia is a problem with understanding and working with language. Dyslexia is a lifelong issue that tends to run in families, so there's often a parent or a sibling who also has it. And brain imaging studies have shown us that there are differences in how the brain is structured and how it functions in people who have dyslexia. But it's important to know that dyslexia has nothing to do with intelligence. Children with dyslexia are just as smart as other children. We can see signs of dyslexia even before children learn to read. Reading is a complicated process that starts with being able to recognize individual sounds in words. Take the word elephant. Most children at a young age can recognize three parts in that word. Elephant. But the child with dyslexia might not hear that fint is actually made up of four different sounds. F, I, N, T. They may only hear one or two. Reading and spelling are hard for kids with dyslexia because first they have to hear those individual sounds, and then they have to understand that each of those sounds is represented by one or more letters. Children with dyslexia usually have difficulty with this basic language skill, which is called phonemic awareness. So you might see your child having trouble with rhyming or isolating the sounds in words. That makes it difficult for your child to match letters to their sounds, like knowing that S sounds like S or that SH sounds like SH. This skill is called decoding, and children use it to sound out words. We know a lot about what can help children with these skills. The most important thing is specialized reading instruction. A well-known approach is called Orton-Gillingham. It helps children to learn to break words down into their component sounds, match the sounds to letters, and then blend those sounds together. Reading programs based on Orton-Gillingham use multisensory techniques. So children might trace letters in sand while saying that letter and its sound, or clap out syllables in words. These methods are proven to be effective. There are also tools like audiobooks, text-to-speech software, and reading apps that can help children with dyslexia. You can help your child at home by reading aloud together every day. Choosing books that tap into your child's passions can help develop an interest in reading. Playing rhyming games, reading nursery rhymes, and singing songs can also be a fun way to help younger children build early reading skills. It's important to know that even though children don't outgrow dyslexia, they can become skilled readers and strong learners. With the right support, they can succeed in school and in life.
There we go. All right. So hopefully that kind of summarized dyslexia and just gives you the big picture. So how do we know if a child has dyslexia? Or how do we, what should we be looking for? In your handout, there is, I believe, the last page in there has the warning signs of dyslexia. And I want to just look at this a little bit together. I'm not going to go over all of it because you can read it. But this is a free resource online. If you look down at the bottom corner, the Bright Solutions for Dyslexia is an excellent website, a resource. And this is a great thing, something that you could give to parents if they are wondering about this, or because they know their child in preschool and this can be really helpful for parents to see. In preschool, in that category, I would just notice that most of those are connected to the whole phonemic awareness thing. Things with rhyming words, with stuttering in their speech, delayed speech can be a sign of dyslexia. Mixing up sounds and syllables in words, like if they, all children do this to some extent, but if they're doing a lot of like, where is it? If they're doing a lot of saying like spaghetti is pischetti or elephant is lephant and not hearing those sounds, aminal instead of animal, like I think to some extent all children do that, but if that continues, that is showing that they're not hearing the sounds in these words and able to put them in the correct order. In elementary school, I would just point out that one of the biggest signs of dyslexia is the difficulty with spelling, like terrible spelling where it's like all over the place and just mixing up all the letters. It's because when a child is learning to read, it's one thing to learn how to decode the words and figure out what sound goes with each one, but then to reproduce that, to be given a word and have to decide which rule is it following this time, is even more difficult than reading. And so that's often a big sign of dyslexia. It also impacts their memory and memorization. I've often found that these students really struggle with Bible memory. I think it's because it's especially if they don't have meaning for the words. Like if the verses are not meaning a lot to them, they don't understand quite what it means. They have to just memorize all these words, and that is really difficult. Often memorizing math facts. Memorizing things that are kind of rote, that don't have a lot of meaning maybe, are difficult for them often. So yeah, I would just remember or keep in mind that, like we had talked about here, these children, if a child has dyslexia, they often use context clues. They're the students that are looking at the pictures to try to figure out what the words are going to say on the page. And they're the ones that are memorizing how the word looks, the shapes of the word. I've seen students like trying to memorize what the word's going to be because of the shape of it and not making the connection that each of these shapes, each of these graphemes, or each of these, like a B makes a certain sound, and recognizing that. So again, I would just emphasize that it's not that they're not trying hard enough. It's that their brain is working differently, and they need some support to solidify their phonemic awareness, essentially, their understanding of language and those letters. So you can look over that paper. I'll just give that to you as a resource. And one other thing, sometimes when we're looking at symptoms, we can be looking at all the negative things, but sometimes you can spot dyslexia if you're looking for, if you see like very significant strength in a certain area. Like they are extremely artistic, or they are extremely athletic, or great with like 3D and those kinds of things, and they won't not be strengths in all of those areas, but sometimes students have these great strengths, but they struggle with the reading piece of it. So look for those, too, in your students, and it's actually, I think dyslexia is easier to detect in a student that's, like, super bright and struggles with the reading. So what do we do about it? How do we help these? That's probably the biggest question, right? What should we do? And So I'm first going to talk about what we should not do. And this first one, I realize, could be a little bit controversial. So I want to offer my opinion or my perspective, and you can take it or leave it. So I would really caution us against like vision therapy and those kinds of things as solutions for dyslexia. So if it's not a vision problem, if it's not a seeing problem, I don't think that vision therapy or things like that is going to actually be a solution. It might be helping a secondary problem, or dyslexia might, vision therapy does help some children, but I think if it does help them, then the problem was not dyslexia. It was something else. That's my take on it. I'm not saying that that's all bad. I'm saying that sometimes, if it does help them, it's probably an issue that different than dyslexia. Maybe they actually had a physical difference with their eyes and they really weren't focusing correctly. That's maybe a physical difference, not a dyslexia problem. Hopefully that makes sense. Also, with the same idea with the color lenses and overlays, like I've never actually seen that to work with a student. Maybe you have. If you have, I would love to hear from you about that. But again, dyslexia is not the vision problem. It's not a seeing problem. And so I think we just have to be, you're welcome to try them, but I haven't actually seen them to work. So medication, we talked about that. It's not a solution. And just trying harder is also not going to be successful if the case is dyslexia, if that is the root of the problem. So what should we do? This whole phonological awareness thing. So this can be kind of confusing because it is these big words. I would phonological awareness is like the umbrella term. So I'm going to do like this. So phonological awareness is the big picture term. It's how we hear sounds in language. And it starts out super basic. So the most basic understanding of phonological awareness is hearing the different words in a sentence. So if you have a sentence, the cow ran down the street, a kindergartner should be able to say, the cow ran down the street. That is 6 words. And hearing the different words, it's not just a blob of sound, hearing the different parts of it. And then the next step would be compound words, putting those together. So if I say cowboy, and the students would say, go ahead.
Cowboy.
Yeah, I'm putting it together. So say it faster, say cowboy.
Cowboy.
Or airplane becomes?
Airplane.
Yes. And then the next step is understanding, doing the same thing with syllables, with blending this. You notice the hand motions I'm using? I really like these, and I think it is a way to, we'll do some more of them, but it's a way to make blending and things more fun and help them to connect all the pieces. So if we would, same thing with table, we could go table becomes
table,
and rocket becomes
rocket.
Or you go the other way around. So blending is putting it together. Segmenting it is taking it apart. So if I would say banana, then you can break it apart and say banana. So, and then it gets even more difficult with words and going down to the individual phonemes. So phonological awareness is all of the sounds. Phonemic awareness is kind of under here. And phonemic awareness, a phoneme, I think of like phone, it's a sound. So a phoneme, with phonemic, a phoneme is the smallest unit of sound in a word. So F says F and R says R, like those, that's the smallest unit that it gets down to. We're breaking it down as small as possible. And so these two up here would be phonemic awareness because they are breaking it down. And so even more difficult then is substituting or deleting or taking those letters and making them into new words. So I want to show you some examples of that. If I tell you the word SOG, say SOG.
SOG.
Change the S to D, and the word is?
Dog.
And see, you are unconsciously skilled, okay? For you to do that, for a student to do that, and to go from SOG to dog, first they had to segment this word. Then they had to isolate the first sound. Then they had to delete it. Then they needed to add this new sound. And then they needed to blend it all together. Okay, there's like six steps in that process. And sometimes students don't know how to do that, or that piece is really tricky. And so just realizing, I think, how we can break down language and learning to read into those small pieces. So I'm just going to show you some of these motions. I want you to help me out a little bit here. We're just going to practice with some of this phonemic awareness, some language. So I'm going to kind of start easier and get more difficult. So I'm going to say two words, and we're going to put the two words together to make a big word, which we kind of have already did this. But if I say, I say ice, add cream, and the word is?
Ice cream.
Say foot.
Foot.
Add ball, and the word is?
Football.
Yes. Say camp.
Camp.
Add ground.
Ground.
And the word is?
Campground.
So that's very simple. Okay, that's, or you could do the opposite way around, and they need to break it apart. The motions just help them, and one thing to think about, if you are doing motions like this is that I'm doing them backwards because we read from this way to this way. So if you were the teacher, you have to do it backwards. So like I'm starting with my right hand. Anyway, just thought I should point that out to you. And then you can do the same thing with syllables. And I like to use, so sometimes the chopping is a great tool to use as well. So I'm going to say a word in parts and then we'll put the parts together to make a whole word. Say four. Add est. And the word is?
Forest.
Yeah, so we kind of all blend it together. Say rock. Add et. And the word is?
Rocket.
And then you can break it down even into phonemes. So I'm going to say the sounds. I want you to blend it together. So the word, the sounds are d-a-t. The word is
dot.
J-a-m-p. The word is
jump.
And then we can get even more difficult. Let's go w-e-n-t. The word is
went.
And then t-r-a-m-p. Et. The word is
trumpet.
So you can, that's a third grade, like that's a more difficult, because the word is more difficult. And then also, sometimes students, like you teach them how to identify the beginning sound, the middle sound, and the ending sounds in words. And I think the beginning sound is usually the easiest, what's to start with. If you want to teach them what's the ending sound in this word, you could go, we're going to like punch it out like this. And so the word, let's go with the word is rough. So go ahead and take your hand, and we're going to slide across like this, and we're going to punch up at the last sound. Okay, so the word is rough. Ready? Rough. We didn't actually do it right. So we want to, yeah, let's do it again. Ready? Rough. What is the sound up here? That's the ending sound. Let's try huge. Ready? Huge. The word sound?
J.
Yeah. Or middle sound, you can do like a roller coaster. You can go, the word is sad. Sad. Sound? Ah. The middle one. That's the tricky one. Or it. Sound?
It.
Yeah. And these are all building phonemic awareness, understanding how sounds and how language works. And then, this is a tricky one, hopefully I can get it together here. Whenever you are substituting words, or sounds. So say plane, change pl to tr, and the word is?
Train.
Yeah, so I kind of went up like this and came down because we're like changing this part of the word. This is the beginning and this is the ending of the word. We're kind of changing that. Or we could do, say twice. Change tw to pr, and the word is?
Price.
Yeah. And then you can do it with endings and with middle. Say brain.
Brain.
Change ain to ick, and the word is?
Brick.
Yeah. Say frown.
Frown.
Change aun to aug, and the word is?
Frown.
Yeah. That's a pretty complex skill for students to do that. And in the middle, I would go like this. So I'll say hot. Change ah to I, and the word is?
Hit.
Yeah. So just some fun ways to work on sounds to make it fun for the students, and I think it helps to connect the pieces for them. Another teaching technique that I want to show you is something called Elkonin boxes, which you have in your handouts. Go ahead and go to, this is what the little pieces are for. Go ahead and go to the boxes sheets. And go ahead and get out your little pieces. And if you can, it'd be nice if we had desks, but if you could line up your pieces along the top like this, maybe that's not going to work. If you're sitting on your lap, if it doesn't work, just make do somehow. So I was working with a student in my classroom this year and then again this summer. And in my study for this, I suddenly got the idea, I was like, maybe she actually is not hearing all the sounds in words. Because when she would spell, when her spelling was what we were working on, she would have all of the correct letters. Every single letter, but they would be all mixed up. So if the word is brain, she would have the B-R-A-I-N, but they would not be in the correct order. And that was often the spelling mistake that she was making. And I suddenly realized that she's memorizing her words, and she's not sounding them out. And she knew what letters were all there and that's why like the next week, she wouldn't remember the words anymore because she crammed so hard to memorize these lists. This is third grade, you can't just memorize it, or it's not very easy to. And so I realized that she was not, like we had talked, like I had talked with the class, you need to sound out the words, and we had done that, but I realized that she didn't actually know how to do that. And so what I had her do, I got this board for her, and I started out simple. I said, let's do a word like, let's go with cat. I want you to pull down a piece, so just take it with your finger and pull down one piece for every sound. So we have k, a, t. This is helping her to think about the sounds, and then she could take her marker, and she could decide k is going to be a c, a, it's going to be an a, t, it's going to be a t. Now that's an easy one. So then we went on, and if I gave her a word like, let's do the word chicken, okay? So go ahead and pull, so what I did is I said, how many sounds are in this word, I asked her. And she was never able to tell me all of them. So she would put like ch-k-n, and had that has three sounds in it. And she couldn't break it down quite into each individual sound. So go ahead and do this, go ahead and do it by yourself first. How many sounds did you get? It's not how many letters. Don't be thinking about spelling. We're not thinking about spelling. We're thinking about the sounds that we're hearing. That's a really important distinction. So maybe close your eyes. Like we go right to the letters. And sometimes this is the piece that students sometimes are missing, is the hearing the sounds. So, ch, I, k, e, n. There are five sounds in this word. Ch, we know, is ch, I, k, ck, e, n. Now, in the case of the student I was working with, she knew the phonics rules. She knew that ch says ch, and she knows that in the middle of a word like this, I don't have all the, but she knew the rule that k sometimes is ck, and so she knew that this was here as well. So once we broke it down like this, she had no problem sounding it out, because then we would erase this, and I would say, now write the word, and she would sound it out in her head, ch, I, k, n, which is what I wanted her to do that she was not doing before. I discovered that she was missing this phonemic awareness piece. Does that make sense? Do you have questions? Like, can I explain it more? So let's do some more. So let's do the word, let's do said. This is a word that we can't sound out entirely. Where am I? So go ahead and pull down your pieces. How many sounds are in the word said?
Three.
Three, yes. Should look like this. And then you could, depending how, if you're tutoring or if you're just working with a student in your classroom, you could tell it this and then have them pull down this and write, this was S, S, E, D. So they would write like this, right? S, E, D. So if I'm working with this child, they are sounding out, which is what I want them to do, I would put a little heart around this letter and said, that's the letter you have to know by heart. Okay, the rest of it, you can sound out. You can sound out the whole rest of the word, but this one, this part, we have to know by heart. That's the part we memorize, not the whole thing. We're not memorizing how it looks. Just that one box. Okay? And I was working then. It made sense to her. I was so excited. So we got even trickier words. Let's just do elephant. Okay? This is going to be a hard one. Think about how does it sound. Think about how does it sound. How many sounds do you have? Seven? Let's talk about it. So here we've got, this is what I did. We have elephant. Elephant. So what she did at first was that she stuck some letters together, like L together, but when we broke it apart, then she was able to sound it out. Now, elephant. So she knew them. So when students are spelling, there's two different problems. Either they don't know the spelling rules, like they don't know that F says PH sometimes, or they don't have the phonemic awareness, they don't have the sounding out part. I feel like those are the two, especially in older grades, those are the two problems that your students are having. So, I'd have her switch this, elif, and then I'd have her, well, now you just say it in your head funny, so say elephant, elephant, anyway. And so, elephant. So I'd get her to say it like that in her head, and that would help her with sounding it out. But this part in here is the part we have to memorize. We can sound the rest of it out. And even knowing in her head that we have something for elephant. Because sometimes it doesn't. You can't sound it out like this. And you do have to memorize it when you get to this kind of difficult words. But just her knowing that there is a S sound here, so something needs to go with that sound. There's an I sound here. Something has to go with that sound. Helped her to make sure that she had a letter for every single one of those sounds. So just a tool that I think, now some students this isn't always the problem, but it's something to try. If they are mixing up, make sure that they know how to do this. If you're teaching first grade, kindergarten, make sure that they are thinking about the sounds and words. And start up here with compound words, syllables, and stuff. But as you get further along, this is how to teach them how to sound out if they're not. So, all right. So those are two techniques, the motions and these boards, that are Orton-Gillingham kinds of skills. And they're kinds of things that you can do in your classroom, whether you are, it can help all of your students, these kinds of things. Now, when you have a student that is struggling significantly, falling very far behind, or you just are very concerned for them, and they're reading because they're not keeping up, this is when we need to be using some kind of Orton-Gillingham-based program. Raise your hand if you have heard of Orton-Gillingham. All right, good. Raise your hand if you have the Barton program in your school. Oh, wow. Good. So, Orton-Gillingham-based programs, the most familiar one that our schools are familiar with is Barton. And what the traits of these are, they're structured, learning every letter and their sounds. They progress only with mastery. So it's important that whoever is teaching Barton, that they're not moving ahead until they've got it. They need to be progressing as they master the skills and not just moving them on. And it can be hard when they're not progressing. And so if you are working with a student through Barton and Barton is not working, there are other options. There's something called the LIPS program and Wilson Reading and All About Reading, which are three other curriculum options. I'm not sure. I feel like they're not as easy to use as Barton. So if you are needing something to help, you can look into that. I have some examples of the curriculum up here if you'd like to look at that later. And it's multisensory. Are any of you in here tutors teaching Barton? Okay. Mm-hmm. And so it is, I know the Barton is kind of, can get boring or laborious after a while. I don't know if you've found it that way. It always looks the same and you do the same things. I would try to make it multisensory when you can. We need to be moving these tiles down. We need to be doing it in sand, doing it in the air, trying to incorporate other senses rather than just hearing and sitting at a desk and doing, especially if it's not progressing, try to incorporate some more of those things in there. So I'm not a full-time tutor, I'm a classroom teacher, and something that I really care about is so my student goes out to get Barton tutoring, but what about the rest of the time when they're with me? How do I help them then? And sometimes every situation is so different, and it really depends on where the student is at and what grade level you're teaching. So I feel like these are just some ideas. It's going to really depend on their situation. But I have found one thing, I kind of talked about earlier, is trying oral testing and seeing, do they know this information? They just can't get it on the page. And if that's the case, I think in a class like history or science, I would feel fine with writing it for them and giving them the grade based on what they know. Now, if it's a reading class, you need to grade them according to their reading skill. But when it's a content, it's the purpose of the class, and they know all the information, they have all the facts down, then I would feel like it's fair to start out with reading to them. And then, of course, you don't want to stay there. You want to gradually be building them up so that they can do it on their own. Getting them to read parts of it to you. Taking turns reading with them. And So in my classroom, sometimes it means I get the class started on their, well, it depends what kind of classroom you have too, but I get them started on their test, and then I would pull a student aside and just whisper it with him. And now it's tricky. You have to make sure that they're talking quietly so that the other students aren't hearing, if you're doing it in your room, that they're not hearing his answers. But working with that and then getting them to slowly build up their stamina to be able to read it on their own. Oh, here. Students could dictate, especially like in writing, if you're having a writing class and this student has a great story, but they can't get it on the paper. And so here again is a great chance. You could say, you write a sentence, then I'll write one for you, and then you write one, then I'll write one. Or you could, it depends where they're at again. But if they're really struggling, you could just write it out for them, and they will be able to get their story on paper, and then you want to gradually build up where they're writing a little more. These students can really be sensitive about their reading ability, and maybe you've heard this week a little bit about repeated reading, depending what you've taken. But giving a student who's really sensitive about or concerned about their reading ability, giving them opportunity or say, I'm going to have you read this paragraph in class today, and give them time to practice it ahead of time, can really help to relieve some of their stress and their help them to feel more confident in their reading. And again, the whole thing of content is it depends what you're going for. If you're going for content, to grade it on what did they write, what's the content versus their spelling and their grammar. I've had a student before that wrote a whole bunch of stuff and I had to have them read it to me so that I knew what it was saying. But I didn't tell them that, but I had them like, so that way I could understand, like I could get most of it, but there are pieces that I was unsure about. Students with dyslexia also, it's very difficult to copy. So like if you're writing things on the board, they need to take notes, especially like in older grades. It's very difficult for them to, because they're like every letter, up and down, up and down, up and down. And they can't, they're not looking at the whole word and writing the whole word, the next word. So if there's ways that you can help them out with that, is might help to give them a boost too. That might mean giving them the notes instead of having them write it. It depends where your student's at and how old they are and what they're capable of doing. And often in our school, when a student, like the writing piece is so difficult, one of the first things that we cut is the cursive writing. Just that if print is easier for them, we want them to at least get some writing out. And again, it depends what you're working with. But I hope that those are some ideas about how to work with them in your classroom. If this has really piqued your interest, you want to learn more about dyslexia, this book, Overcoming Dyslexia, is probably the best book to read on dyslexia, I think. It's pretty thorough. It gives lots of understanding of what's going on and what's actually wrong and how do we help them. And then recently, I have enjoyed this book, Dyslexia Assessment and Intervention. A lot of specifics about it. You can come up and look at it if you would like to. But it has a lot of specifics about different parts of reading, like the fluency and the decoding and then the spelling, and just giving suggestions for methods to use to help them. So, here's the first book is the one Overcoming Dyslexia, and the second one is the second book I showed here. If you go online, the best resource I feel like actually on dyslexia, the easiest access is this Bright Solutions for Dyslexia website with Susan Barton. That has a lot of information on there about, and videos to watch, clips, and some. It kind of helps to summarize everything, which I really like about that. So we have like 1 minute left. What are your questions or something that you feel like, well, that works for me, but it won't work for my classroom? Or what questions do you have that I could clarify anything. Go ahead.
I'm very curious. I have first and second grade, mm-hmm. and I had third grade also last year. And I have phrase flashcards in my room. And I began using them for first, second, and third grade on a time drill.
Okay.
And it improved
to read them.
That I am almost sure dyslexic to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
It improved their reading skills. Why mm-hmm. was that?
It's working on fluency,
yeah.
Right?
I didn't know if that has something to do with dyslexia.
Yeah.
Something else altogether.
Well, fluency is a part of dyslexia too. So, like, the phonemic awareness is part of it, but it is. Then you have to take that and go quickly with it. Like. Do the blending, be able to blend and do all of those steps smoothly and quickly. As long as they weren't memorizing what the card said, but you probably had so many that they couldn't.
But it right? actually improved their...
Like, improved their...
Their test grades and everything went up after.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I found that interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. I'm glad it worked. it probably was the fluency practice is needed. Yeah. Anything else?
What is the children's book? Is that one children read to help them?
Yeah, that would be one that I found. That would be if a child is trying to understand its friend that's different or trying to understand just what's different about me. It was a very, yeah. There are lots of books out there right now about, with social issues and things and books that just help children understand these things. So, yeah. All right, well, thank you so much for your attention, and I hope that this has helped you out and that you go out better equipped as you go back into your classrooms this fall. So have a great rest of your day. You are dismissed.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.